Welcome to Evolutions Weekly, where we dive into the details of many periodic evolutions, elections. I'm your host, Alvin, and this week we're going to be doing something a little bit different once again. In fact, we're actually going to be talking about our first South American election by looking at the Peruvian elections that are actually going to be happening this Saturday. So, you know, I think it's like if you don't know much about Latin American politics, you know, or about, you know, about Peruvian politics in particular, that's fine. It's like that's what I'm here for, basically. And because I didn't really know much about it either initially, but, you know, after doing some research, after learning about the things that are, you know, kind of like happening in the current election and the things that have happened in the past, you know, it's certainly an interesting, you know, like dynamic that we can look at and, you know, kind of speaks to like the larger dynamics found within Latin American politics more generally. So with that being said, let's just get straight into it. So, you know, when you think of Peru, you know, like you kind of think of like, you know, just any average South American country, you know, like Peru, Ecuador, Bolivia, you know, like it's no Brazil, it's no Venezuela, but I think like it certainly is a significant country in the Americas, a significant country in the world, you know. I think it's like Peru makes, for example, it's the world's second largest producer of copper, for example. It's just like things like that that you might not know. But, you know, but I think like Peruvian politics as well is actually really interesting. So Peru in itself actually is a relatively new democracy. And when it comes to Latin America, actually, just because of the Cold War, democracy has just been been like a very new, recent phenomenon. So in Peru, it's only since the 1980 specifically, that there has been actual consistent elections and consistent changes in government. So before this, of course, you know, like most of Latin America, it was a right-wing military junta. And so, you know, elections and free speech and all these kinds of things were like heavily suppressed. So now we got that out of the way. So who are the kind of like the main contenders in this upcoming election? So this election in particular is actually really interesting. And the reason I've actually even heard about it and the reason I've actually decided to cover it ultimately is actually because of, you know, of the two interesting candidates that are actually running in this particular election. So on the one side, you know, you have a guy by the name of Pedro Castillo. So he's actually a poor teacher and, you know, like union leader from the department of Cajamarca. So, you know, essentially, you know, he's like from like the interior provinces. He's nowhere near, you know, Lima, Cusco, you know, like the richer regions of Peru. And, you know, he kind of grew up in like this department, which, you know, which Cajamarca actually has like Peru's largest gold mine, for example. But, you know, but it's actually like one of Peru's like poorest departments. So, you know, it's like the fact that, you know, like you live in a province with, you know, like large deposits of natural resources, you live in a country with large deposits of natural resources, and yet you still have widespread poverty, you know, kind of speaks to, you know, to both the inequalities found within Peru and as well. And, you know, kind of like tells you a little bit about what his politics is going to be, which we'll get to in a little bit. And the other candidate for this race is Keiko Fujimori. Now, if you're wondering, what's a Japanese name doing in a Peruvian election? Interestingly enough, I think 25% of Peru is actually of East Asian descent. So both Chinese and Japanese descent. And the Fujimori name in particular is actually really significant in Peru. Because like Keiko Fujimori's father, Alberto Fujimori, is actually, you know, Peru's longest running president since the establishment of democracy in 1980. And he, you know, is a very controversial figure in his own right.
With lots of corruption scandals, lots of dubious political practices in his belt, but also most notably, literally nearly crippling Peruvian democracy in 1993 by rewriting the constitution to give the president more power and by dissolving parliament at the same time. So going back to the candidates, you know, first of all, we have
Pedro Castillo is running with the Free Peru Party, which, you know, actually is a pretty insignificant party, you know, like it didn't have really seats in a national congress, for example, but, you know, but it's a far left party. It's, you know, like economically, you know, like very, you know, like nationalist, very, you know, like collectivist, things like that. And then on the next side, we have the Popular Force, you know, like headed by Keiko Fujimori himself, which is a quote unquote Fujimorist party, which is a lot more right wing, a lot more neoliberal, a lot more establishment. So, you know, so on the one hand, we have like a very socialist, we have like a very, you know, like collective, it's a very populist party. And on the other side, we have, you know, like a very standard neoliberal, very standard, you know, like not really centrist even, like even a little bit more towards the right wing side of politics, and Fujimori's as well. And, you know, and just like quickly, so I think it's like Alberto Fujimori is actually, you know, responsible for many of like the neoliberal reforms in the 90s in Peru itself. And, you know, and he was actually part of like the many leaders at the time who actually instituted a lot of these neoliberal reforms, a lot of which actually ended up disenfranchising a lot of people. Now, you know, just like a quick note as well. So, you know, for Fujimori, this is going to be her third run for president. And for Pedro Castillo, it's going to be his first run as president. So what's interesting, you know, with the Peruvian system, and I think it's like a lot of systems in the world operate in the same way, is that there was actually two rounds of voting. So in the first round of voting, there was about 10 candidates, I believe. So it's like a whole bunch of different parties, both, you know, like really significant parties in the Congress, as well as parties like, you know, like Free Peru, which don't even have seats in the Congress, but, you know, but are allowed to field candidates nevertheless. So basically what kind of happened is that, you know, like Pedro Castillo in this first round managed to get 18%, you know, which is actually a very small number, you know, if you think about it. And Keiko Fujimori is actually able to get 13%, even smaller. So interestingly enough, 13% is actually smaller than the number of, you know, like uncountable ineligible ballots. So, you know, it kind of speaks to like the sort of like trends that you're kind of seeing within Peruvian politics. And every other candidate, you know, got like abysmal numbers as well, 11%, 8%. So basically, you know, there was a lot of candidates and a lot of them got like only about like 8, 9, 10%. So that's kind of like the picture that you know, that you kind of see where it's like, yeah, you know, basically there's not really like, there wasn't, at least, you know, like in the first round, a clear contender. I guess the clearest contender, of course, you know, would be Pedro Castillo. And that's why, you know, like he's kind of like, you know, going to the second round and why he's kind of like gaining steam and getting prominence as well. And, you know, just in general. So essentially, you know, we have in general this like left right wing fight, you know. So we have like the left wing, you know, represented by Free Peru and Pedro Castillo, and we have the right wing represented by Keiko Fujimori and the Popular Force. So of course, you know, with like the left wing politics side of things, you know, like left wing, you know, like kind of like politics in Latin America has always been like a very, you know, like contentious subject, but also like a very interesting subject as well, in that, you know, like people tend to have really mixed feelings about left-wing politics, about, you know, like socialist politicians, communist politicians, just, you know, like just in general, you know, like Latin America has this really amicable relationship with socialism in some cases, you know, in the case of Venezuela, Bolivia, you know, like Ecuador, Cuba, and then, you know, and in some cases, you know, like a really antagonistic relationship because of all the right-wing juntas over the decades, you know, like in Chile, like in Brazil, in Peru. So that's kind of like what the left wing side of things look like. But in the right wing side of things, you know, like in Peru specifically, you know, it's the right wing, you know, like sort of like faction of Peruvian politics, you know, is very much attached to the legacy of Alberto Fujimori. You know, like I said earlier, you know, he's kind of like the guy in the 90s who not only instituted a lot of these neoliberal reforms, a lot of these like, you know, like right wing policies as well, but, you know, like going up, you know, when he was first running as president, his coalition was literally small and medium business owners, as well as evangelical Protestants, which is, you know, interesting since, you know, Peru's majority Catholic. But, you know, like what I've been saying a couple of times in the show is that, you know, like you don't really need a lot of people to be with you initially, but you really only need a certain percentage of people to passionately support you. And in Alberto Fujimori's case, it was the evangelical Christians. So he went up, you know, like that way. So as such, you know, his economics would have been and was, you know, like a lot more neoliberal, a lot more pro-business, for example, you know, anti-union, you know, so you would get the idea because, you know, of course, the business owners put him in power. But at the same time, you know, he's also very right-wing, you know, anti-abortion, you know, on like all the social issues, you know, very, very right-wing as well because of evangelical Christians. And just like, you know, in general, you know, like the country is a conservative Catholic country. So, you know, you could see why that's the case. And of course, you know, like besides this tenuous relationship with left-wing factions in Latin America, I think like besides that dynamic of, you know, that we see with Pedro Castillo, we also see this dynamic of anti-Fujimorism, in that Pedro Castillo in this instance is the most viable resistance against the Fujimori legacy, basically, the Fujimori order. And of course, you know, like Keiko, you know, like, of course, wanting to uphold the legacy of her own father would of course, you know, like, support a lot of Fujimorist policies. But, you know, that doesn't mean she's only supportive of those policies. Of course, you know, she has her own kind of ideas of what Peru should be. But, you know, most of it is, you know, certainly within the line of Fujimorism, whereas Pedro Castillo's campaign is this one by this idea of anti-Fujimorism as a resistance against the neoliberal order, a resistance against the establishment. And, you know, like, then you might be thinking, you know, it's like, you know, like, in a time like this, you know, like, how is it that this
anti-establishment
radical candidate was actually able to rise up? Because in previous elections, although there were certainly left-wing candidates, viable candidates, you know, like, who actually managed to beat Keiko Fujimori in the two other elections, for example, you know, why this time, you know, we have this radical, you know, like, school teacher from a rural region, you know, like, who, interestingly enough, actually gained prominence because in 2017, I believe there was a teacher strike in Peru, and that's how he managed to, like, to gain national name recognition, basically. So he was a teacher, and he was a union leader. So that's kind of, like, how he got going. So, like, so why is this, like, this person who's, you know, like, nowhere near being a politician, who's nowhere near, you know, like, the capitals, you know, like, capital of Lima, or, like, you know, all the other richer regions, who's very, very, like, you know, like, anti-establishment, like, why is he, you know, able to go up? So, interestingly enough, actually, you know, like, of course, you know, like, in general, we live in interesting times in that, you know, around the world, we have a lot of these interesting people going into politics. But in Peru specifically, it's actually interesting that, you know, this whole previous year, actually, you know, like, there's been a huge wave, a series of, you know, like, things happening, a series of trends, which kind of, like, show that, you know, that there is this, like, you know, like, bubbling anger against the establishment, you know, like, the Fujimori regime in particular, of course, because that's what started it all. So, you know, for example, there was a Peruvian protest, a really big one, actually, last year, because that's due to the fact that I think, so essentially what had happened was that there was a whole bunch of impeachments going on last year, and literally Peru went through three different presidents in 2020. So up to right now, they've basically had four presidents within the last year. So there was one guy who got elected, he actually resigned. Then his vice president took over. But when he wanted to crack down on corruption, the Congress literally impeached him over, you know, dubious claims. And so they installed another guy who established a far right-wing government. And this is when the protests actually happened. And after this protest happened, he got impeached. And then we have the current guy. Now, the current guy is like a, you know, like a moderate, mellow centrist, you know, so, you know, like, not much is happening in that way. And he probably rightly knows that, you know, if he was to do anything radical right now, it wouldn't really fare well for him, but also for the stability of the country. But, you know, that's basically, you know, like, what kind of happened last year. And, you know, just with COVID and just things like that in general, you know, you would kind of, like, see, you know, like, with like, you know, people, you know, being, like, really, you know, like, kind of, like, mad about, like, their horrible handling. Actually, interestingly enough, Peru actually has, like, the world's, like, highest per capita death rate of, like, for COVID. So, you know, like, that's the case. And unemployment went up by, like, 10% last year as well. So, you know, it's definitely not a really good situation in Peru right now. And, you know, that's basically why people have been, like, so willing to vote for so-called radical candidates. And, you know, like, guess in this case, you know, like, Pedro Castillo is their man. So then, of course, we see, like, this huge, like, battle, essentially. So, but then, like, you know, you see this argument, but then there's also, like, a couple of counters as well. For example, you know, like, there's actually a huge right-wing and centrist prominence in the Congress, for example. And it's not just Fujimori's parties. So, of course, you know, like, interestingly enough, I think, like, last year they actually had a parliamentary election which elected a lot of these new parties. Bear in mind, though, that Keiko Fujimori's popular force specifically went down drastically. It was actually, like, I believe about a third of the Congress. And, like, now, you know, they only have, like, 13 seats or, like, something like that. It's really abysmal. But, you know, but like I said, you know, like, for all the other parties in parliament, there are a whole bunch of other right-wing, a whole bunch of centrist parties as well. Now, you know, of course, centrists, you know, tend to kind of, like, you know, like, although, you know, like, they might have their own different platforms, ultimately, centrism stands for the status quo. Centrism stands for this current neoliberal order. So that's why, you know, centrism can also be lumped into establishment as well, you know, in two varying degrees and extents. So, for example, you have Popular Action with 24 seats, Alliance for Progress, 20, and Popular Force, you know, which only has 14, Popular Force being Keiko Fujimori's own party. So, you know, so you see the top three parties in the parliament are actually all, you know, right-wing and centrist parties. So then, you know, you could say, oh, you know, well, if they had an election last year, you know, like, then why is it that all these centrist and right-wing parties are still able to maintain a significant lead against the other left-wing parties, and a lot of these more radical parties didn't get voted in? So that's a fair argument. But then, of course, you know, you'll have to consider as well the fact that these parliamentary elections actually happened in January 2020. So literally long before this whole debacle with the impeachments, this whole thing with the corruption scandals, with the right-wing governments, with the protests. So basically, before all this happened, they had the parliamentary election, and that's kind of like what is reflected in these results. But it kind of shows you as well that, you know, although right-wing politics in Peru, centrist politics in Peru is still very much alive, Fujimori's politics might be on the way out. And that's, you know, certainly interesting to see what will happen to, you know, Keiko Fujimori's prospects in this upcoming election. And of course, you know, like, what the same thing that you might see in, like, the US, for example, with Joe Biden, you kind of see that, you know, a lot of people don't actually really like Keiko Fujimori or don't really like Fujimorism specifically. But because she's the only right-wing candidate running against literally a radical left-wing candidate, you know, that's basically their only option. So Fujimorism might be on its last legs, might be on the way out. But because she's the only viable candidate right now, it will probably give her life, the movement life, Fujimorism, you know, like ideology, a few more years of viability. But anyways, another interesting thing I like to point out as well is, you know, I keep telling you, you know, like, we have, you know, like, the Free Peru Party, a very left-wing party. We have the Popular Force, a right-wing party. But, you know, so far, that's what I've been telling you. But that's really only true economically. Now, see, socially, both are actually relatively conservative. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying, you know, like, with how Alberto Fujimori was able to win his election in the 90s, basically was, you know, he was basically essentially able to, like, you know, bring up this, like, right-wing revolutionary fervor, right-wing populist fervor within the electorate. But just in general, you know, he was able to do that because the country is still relatively conservative. And that's kind of like why, you know, Free Peru, for example, you know, is, although economically socialist, economically populist, socially, they are still very conservative. So, you know, for example, you know, like, in terms of things like, you know, like, LGBTQ rights, in terms of abortion policy, in terms of just like the rhetoric around nationalism and things like that, you know, it's still very right-wing. It's still very conservative. So, you know, that's basically what we have, you know, in both Free Peru, but also in some left-wing parties as well. There's a couple of progressive, you know, like left-wing, socially left-wing parties, but, you know, they're way less viable than Free Peru is right now, which kind of speaks to, you know, the need to, you know, kind of speaks to both the need to both adapt left-wing policies to the, you know, the actual social conditions, and just like the fact that, you know, like, in the West, we have this, they have this idea that, you know, that left-wing politics economically necessarily means left-wing politics socially. But, you know, you see in Latin America and you see in most of Asia and some parts of Africa, that's not really necessarily the case. Granted, you know, there are some countries in Latin America itself, like Argentina, for example, or Chile, which has this progressive platform, even with a right-wing traditionalist platform. But, you know, in the case of Peru, what we see is the opposite, where it's like, yeah, it's like not necessarily just because you want nationalization, just because you want, you know, you want to rally against the establishment, that doesn't necessarily mean you might be the most liberal when it comes to social policies. So that's interesting as well. And the next thing as well, in terms of trends, you know, a lot of like what Keiko Fujimori's campaign has been saying about Pedro Castillo is that, you know, like, you know, it's the same argument basically that Trump used against Joe Biden stupidly, but it's the same argument where, oh, you know, if you vote for this guy, he's going to turn your country to Venezuela. He's going to turn your country to Cuba. Now, do you want to live in Venezuela or Cuba? You know, like, you want to, you know, I like this guy, you know, like this farmer with no political experience, with no political acumen, or you want to elect somebody like Fujimori, who is experienced, who's been in Congress, whose father was, you know, I guess in this case, quote unquote, a great president. Of course, you know, Alberto Fujimori himself is really touchy, but that's why sometimes, you know, Keiko Fujimori plays a strategy where she might go against her own father if it's convenient. But anyways, you know, basically their main line of argument, line of attack is basically, oh, you want to be Venezuela? You want to be, you know, Cuba? And of course, basically what, you know, the Pedro Castillo campaign has been going against Fujimori for is, you know, the standard, you know, anti-establishment, the populist rhetoric. But I think it's like his motto, for example, is like, no more poor people in a rich country. So, you know, you get the idea of like what his whole platform is about. It's about rallying against the establishment, whereas Fujimori's thing is about, oh, you know, let's prevent this greater evil from happening to our beloved country. And so that's basically what kind of is. But, you know, based on the rhetoric, what I'm starting to get is the idea that, you know, it's going to be less like a Venezuela. It's going to be way less like a Cuba. And I think most likely what's going to happen to Peru if Pedro Castillo actually wins is that he's probably going to follow like a Bolivia model. Now, granted, the Bolivia model isn't exactly the best for business people, sure, but it is certainly the best when it comes to actually lifting quality of life. Now, you know, with like in Bolivia, you know, like as soon as Evo Morales was able to get into power, you know, like literally literacy rate shot up, GDP per capita shot up, prosperity shot up. So, you know, it is a viable model and it is a successful model. So that's basically what Pedro Castillo is likely to do when he actually does get into power. But don't get me wrong, this movement that, you know, that Free Peru is, you know, like heading is certainly, you know, like similar, and it certainly has it, you know, like has solidarity with a lot of the other Latin American socialist movement, you know, like the socialism of the 21st century movements, you know, found in Bolivia with Evo Morales, found in Venezuela with Hugo Chavez, found in Nicaragua, I forgot the guy's name, Cuba, of course, you know, like being the OG, and of course, you know, Ecuador as well more recently. So that's basically what's likely to happen, you know, in that, you know, like the, all this campaign about, you know, him wanting to destroy the country is, you know, is very typical of, you know, like, of like right-wing rhetoric in the Americas, but also in other parts of the world as well to an extent. So whereas, you know, like the left-wing rhetoric in this case is also similar to what you find in other countries, this idea of anti-establishment politics, this idea of, you know, populist politics, just in general, things like that. And like I said, in general, we live in weird times, so politics is bound to be very polarized and very radical. Bearing all this in mind, what do the polls actually say about these two? So, you know, like I said, you know, like with in the first round of voting, Castillo managed to gain 18 points and Fujimori gained 13. So, you know, it's a pretty significant lead when looked at that way. But, you know, remember, we still have the other 69. You know, what do they say and what are their political leanings? So right now, as the polls stand, we kind of have a slight lead for Castillo, actually. It's a very small lead, so that's why it's a very razor-sharp race. Initially, Castillo had a huge lead against Fujimori, you know, because, of course, you know, Fujimori has a lot more baggage. Let's just make that clear. But as people try to promote her as the lesser evil, as the more competent of the two, the gap kind of begins to close, and now we kind of have this neck-to-neck race, basically, between the two. So right now, it's still a slight lead for Castillo, but it's within 3%. Meaning we're within the margin of error. And, you know, even though the polls kind of show a tight race, don't get me wrong, the polls in this case actually were completely wrong in the first round. They predicted somebody else completely to actually win the first place. And, like, what ended up happening was that, you know, like, not only did they get it wrong, they didn't even consider Pedro Castillo at all. And Pedro Castillo ended up, you know, like, soaring high in that first round. So it might not even really help us in the second round to determine who might actually win. So, you know, it might be, you know, like a Castillo landslide even. It might be a Fujimori, you know, victory, slightly. Because don't get me wrong, Fujimori in her last three elections actually always managed to get into the top two. And every time she's in the top two, she always lost by like 1 or 2%. So, you know, maybe there is this like silent majority of Fujimori's voters just waiting to, you know, like vote their person into office. But, you know, with just how, like, you know, how, like, low, like, just, like, the decline in general of the Fujimori brand, you know, you might not see as high of a turnout, as high of a numbers for her, even despite the fact that she is promoted as the lesser evil between Kerr and Castillo. So we'll just have to see. But, you know, if Fujimori does get elected, you would get, I think what like some people are saying is like the first woman of Japanese descent to be elected as leader anywhere in the world, because Japan doesn't have a female prime minister yet. But if you have Castillo, then, you know, first, you know, you probably see an Evo Morales kind of like movement in Peru itself, and you might see a similar development trajectory. We'll just have to see, but it'll be interesting to see what the results are nevertheless. So anyways, that's all I have for you for now. You know, like, stay tuned for the actual results, you know, like when they actually come out. So in terms of what I might do, you know, in the upcoming few weeks, there's going to be a lot of good elections coming up, certainly. And, you know, and if there aren't, I'll definitely discuss a lot of like other thematic things. But, you know, that's all I have for you for now. And, you know, if you're on Spotify, if you're on other podcast platforms, give this podcast a follow. If you're on YouTube, do the usual, comment, rate, and subscribe. And, you know, just like put in the comments, you know, like what you kind of think the results will be, or like when the results do come out, you know, like how close was I, or like what do you think this might do for like Peruvian politics and just for Peruvian development in general. So anyways, that's all I have for you now. See you next time.